Hello, ladies and gentlemen, dudes and dudettes, and welcome to Keyframe, the dedicated animation podcast.
We're here today with obviously Rob and Dave and myself, Ben.
Hello.
Welcome, Ben.
Yes.
How are you guys today?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm okay, yes.
Okay, shall we get on with some news then?
Yes, we are getting on with some news. We're going to start off with Disney's live-action version of Beauty and the Beast.
Tale as old as time, all the other words. Beauty and the Beast. There we go. I'm pretty sure that's exactly how.
Yeah.
If they haven't, like, cast the singing guys, I'll do that.
You want to be Belle?
No, Belle doesn't sing that song. It's the candelabra and the clock.
Oh. No, they don't sing it. It's Jessica.
What's it's the teapot.
Yeah, it's the teapot. Mrs. Sorry. Potts.
So you want to be the teapot?
Yeah, go on.
He wants to be an old woman.
Anyway, this is continuing on the live action series. They recently released Cinderella to quite a good turnaround, really.
Yeah. I mean, as well as that, there's things like Once Upon a Time, the live action series is going really well for them, and it seems like Disney are really
they've been like slowing on their like live action movies as of late, and it seems they're going back into their stride.
Yeah, I mean, they've announced the release date for this, which is the 17th of March 2017, and it's a 3D live action and CG retelling of the classic story.
Well, they've said that Emma Watson's going to play Belle.
Yeah, and Dan Stevens is going to play the Beast/Prince.
Who's going to play Gaston?
Yeah, that's the important one.
Luke Evans. Luke Evans is going to play Gaston.
Is he equipped to play Gaston?
I don't know.
Can he do more push-ups than you?
I don't know.
Have you seen that meme going around? Basically, at Disneyland, they have the costumers going around doing the thing. And people have been challenging the guy that plays Gaston to press-ups.
Can he go around stomping in big boots?
He invariably does more press-ups than anyone that challenges him. And one arm.
Is he especially good at expectorating?
There was an amazing one where he's doing the push-ups like, and the other guy's struggling. So he's like, do you need a hand? And he puts out his hand and carries on doing the push-ups. And like, yep.
And every single inch of him is covered in hair.
Yes.
Yep.
Things I know about Gaston.
My what guy?
So,
oh, God. It's amazing how much those songs come back into the memory. Continuing with the live action animation to live action news, Attack on Titan, the trailer's been out.
Yeah, you see less in the trailer than you did in the car advert that happened last year.
It's weird. I was watching the trailer. I was like, I want to see some Titans.
I saw like the clip from the show where they first aired it, and was like, it's more clips of the anime here than the actual movie.
Yes. And you made a good point about Mikasa as well.
Oh, yeah, that her big plot point is that she is the last surviving Asian in that world.
Yes.
Whereas in the live-action cast are almost exclusively Japanese.
Yeah. Maybe they should make it like English or something.
Which, actually, the casting for the most part is really good.
Yeah.
Eren and Mikasa, they look spot on.
Yes.
Hanji looks really good. But it's Armin that it's the little...
Yeah.
The one that's a bit weird.
Because he's now got black hair, although he was famously the blonde one.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to have the same bowl cut either.
Yeah.
There is something of a... of a rumor going around, because the guy who's playing Eren is part of some J-pop group. They reckon the movie's being used as a vehicle to further his career.
Mm. But tell you the truth, they do this in movies all the time. They get it's basically the same as when a movie over here has a big actor. They're like, hey, look, it's this big actor. You should go see it for this big actor.
Yeah.
It's sort of the equivalent.
Yeah.
Like they get a big J-pop star as the thing, and people go see it for that person.
And I will say one thing. I do like the way they've done the costumes.
Yeah, they look really
the costumes,
nice.
The costumes look really good. They look the part.
Oh, yeah.
So in the trailer, you also get a quick look at the Colossal Titan. He's looking nice. You also get a view of one of the other Titans holding up a guy by his foot.
Yeah, and one of the characters who I'm amazed at how much they managed to get her looking like the character from the anime and the manga. was Satomi Ishihara, who's playing Hans or Hanji.
Oh, Hanji. Yeah. Oh, it looks brilliant.
It's really good choice there.
I think the way she emotes looks dead on as well.
Yeah.
They're being incredibly excited about bizarre things.
The promotional image they've sent out is her looking very excited while holding an RPG.
Yeah. I don't remember there being RPGs.
No, the tech was more sort of like...
Medieval.
Medieval-ish. It had cannons
and swords and
Gatling guns. I'd say about like...
Probably about 18th century. Late 18th century is what you're thinking, yeah.
Like War of Independence kind of...
Mid to late 18th century kind of thing.
Because they do have guns, but they're not very good.
They're more like... They're kind of an upgraded version of flintlocks and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm a bit curious where the RPG fits in.
Yeah, I do find it funny that the image of the RPG is followed by one with a bow. Just like...
Yeah, I know. It's how very Hunger Games.
This is a world where both bows and RPGs are feasible weapons.
Yes, apparently. So, yes. I do like the outfits. I like the concept of it as a live-action movie. I am curious how it's going to work, though. Because it's one of those that could really easily go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they get it wrong, there's going to be a lot of fallout from that.
Yep. Well, the other week we talked about, was it Sony's registered a load of Attack on Titan? Like, they might be waiting to see if there's any problems with this version.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the big franchise at the moment, so...
Yeah.
But we'll talk more about that later on in the show. Moving on, there's a Kickstarter campaign for an animated horror film called Boxhead, which looks really interesting. It's an indie film by Randall Kaplan, and it's not often that you see animated horror.
That's true, yeah.
Especially in the West.
Especially Western, they normally pigeonhole animation into kids kind of categories or for all.
You know, some of the design work for this actually looks really interesting. It's really dark, kind of, I wouldn't say brooding, but more sinister.
Yeah.
So, you know, it looks like it's trying to capture the right sort of feel.
I mean, is the Kickstarter going well for it? It's a bit of a niche audience. That's the problem.
Niche things tend to do quite well on Kickstarter because those niches aren't getting fulfilled by the mainstream.
But a lot of horror fans might not necessarily consider animation a medium that's worth looking at. And
well, at the moment, it's got 32 days left, and it's on $18,429. The goal is $26,000, so it seems to be going okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Just a bit of context from the campaign page. It says, there's a place beneath the facade of normalcy, a place that crawls with our deepest fears and darkest desires. Built of longing and regret, sometimes the things we try to hide away in that place don't fit and spill over. Sometimes our nightmares breathe. And then it goes into some of the artwork some of the concept artwork from the animated feature.
Yeah.
Looks really interesting. There's a lot of kind of, you know, have you ever done any of that manga horror like Gyo and stuff like that, where it's all very kind of disturbingly gruesome? You know, where they have like a lot of creatures with all sorts of mouths in different places and eyeballs everywhere.
Yeah, so the body shock
kind of the body shock type thing. There's elements of that definitely in this. Some of it's a bit Cronenberg as well. You know, some of it gives me a kind of Cronenberg feel. I am curious about this.
So that was Boxhead?
Boxhead, yes. I do want to see this now.
Sounds like it's a good chunk for its Kickstarter goal.
Yeah. I hope it makes it, because I do want to see it.
Right, should do within another 30 days, if it's already got 18,000 out of 26.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, moving on. NPC have put their new X-Sense motion capture system to work. Now, this is a bit of a leap forward for motion capture, isn't it, Dave?
There's been some work into it. People have been trying to do setups with camera phones or other things to do. Well, basically what it is a portable motion capture system.
Yeah.
And that's really, really useful, given that right now a lot of motion capture is limited by what you can do in a space. and that makes studios much more expensive if you need a bigger space to have, like, if you want, for example, if you want the animation doing for the next Assassin's Creed game and you need all the parkour stunts doing and you need, like, to simulate jumping from rooftop to rooftop, doing that in a motion capture studio means that's quite expensive. That's quite a big ask and a lot you need to set up to do that.
You try and get two rooftops in a mocap studio.
But if you could make another space into a mocap studio, essentially what that could be a lot better, and that seems to be what the piece of tech here is doing. It has a very short setup time.
10 minutes. It can be up and running in under 10 minutes. It's got cleaner data, and it's got a 9.5-hour battery.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get a lot of stuff done during that time.
Yep.
So, yeah. Be interesting to see just how effective this is.
Now, the only disadvantage to a system like that really is reshoots.
Yeah.
Because the data is calibrated for that one shot, and you would need to set up the situation exactly as it was for a reshoot.
And if you're outside, that's difficult. Because the lighting always changes, stuff like that.
Oh, lighting doesn't matter.
Oh, does that not matter?
The mocap, like, you know the balls that they pick up?
I didn't say a thing. You're the one with the smirk.
It's like, it's a very low light. It's like infrared kind of sensor that they use to pick it up. So it's not affected by, like,
what
visuals, really. It's like, yeah.
Okay.
So, like, in light levels and things wouldn't really affect it. As long as there's enough light to reflect back the signal, that's all they need. But, it's more that the cameras would need to be positioned at exactly the same place they were before.
Okay.
Yeah, if they've moved a little bit, it'll mess up the data.
So for reshoots, that might be the only thing that's a bit of a problem there. But as long as you can get everything you need in that 9 hours, then you're golden.
Okay. We have one shot and 9 hours to try and reproduce it.
But you could, for example, on a sports game or anything like that, you could set up in the actual places where people train. You could get, like, realistic mocap by them doing the actual thing rather than
that would be so much
simulating
better.
That
would be
the
so
action.
Much better.
Yeah, the things I'm thinking of is, like, gymnastics and stuff where you can't exactly get a lot of the kit into a mocap studio.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, those rings that hang from the ceiling, how are you going to set that up in a mocap studio?
Because you can set up anywhere, you can mocap that stuff a lot
and
easier.
The fog on, like, the normal suit with this. Normally, the mocap suit is a bit like a morph suit, Sentai suit, that covers the whole body.
Yeah.
With this system, they've stripped it right down to just bands.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So it means that, it's a lot more
natural.
Yeah.
It gives you that freedom of movement because the morph suit, I suppose, is going to be quite restrictive in certain ways.
I have a bit of a bizarre story about figuring out what the issues with that were. A friend of mine is a pole dancer.
Okay, where's this going?
No, she does the proper gymnastic pole, where she puts her body entirely horizontal against gravity kind of stuff.
Wasn't there some campaign to make it turn it into an Olympic event?
It's essentially the top level stuff is it's very gymnastic. You need amazing core strength to do it.
Yeah,
but we wanted to try and get some mocap because it would look brilliant animation.
Yeah,
but the issues were one, setting the pole up in a mocap studio.
Yeah,
that's difficult. Two, she needs to grip the pole with her body for certain movements.
Yeah,
and in the normal mocap suits, it's impossible. So if you see pole dancers in skimpy outfits, that's not necessarily for anyone's titillation or anything. That's because it gives you a better grip on the pole.
Yeah.
So there's a lesson in mocap and pole dancing.
Dave's two true loves.
Yes. The only thing I know is that I can't hang upside down on a pole dancing pole. I know. I've tried. It don't work.
Got to respect that core strength.
My core strength isn't bad, it's just I weigh too much.
Right. My core strength's good, unfortunately it's covered in a layer of fat.
okay, we'll leave that to one side. Moving on, they've announced, One Punch Man is getting animated.
Yes. Yeah.
They've announced the people who are going to be involved.
The seiyus and the directors and all couple,
the seiyus for Genos and Saitama have been announced. Makoto Furukawa is going to play Saitama, I think, and Kaito Ishikawa is going to play Genos. It's going to be directed by Shingo Natsume, who's also the director of Space Dandy, Fullmetal Alchemist, The Sacred Star of Milos, and a few other things. Sacred Star of Milos wasn't great, but Space Dandy was.
Is he the director of Space Dandy?
Yeah, he's the director of Space Dandy.
Cool.
They're working at Madhouse. It's going to be done by Madhouse, so the animation should be pretty decent.
Yeah.
The script is being done by Tomohiro Suzuki, who did the Tiger and Bunny scripts, Sensei, Legend of the Sanctuary, and various other stuff.
In the hero genre, he's got some experience.
Yeah. And the character designs are being done by Chikashi Kubota, who did the stuff for From the New World and Robotics Notes.
Okay.
So they got a pretty decent setup there.
What? It has a very distinct look as a manga. Are they going
to... I don't want to know how they're going to do it. When Saitama's just kind of, you know, he has that really simplistic look.
Yeah.
I want to know how they're going to do that.
Obviously they have like face faults in anime quite a lot. Yeah. But this is almost... It's almost like he either has one of two faces. It's either serious or completely simplistic.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a bit bipolar in the art style. So will it emulate that, or will it just go to the vein, sweat droop kind of face fault?
I'm hoping they emulate that rather than doing the sweat drop type thing. It's kind of basically, you know, in the kind of really nice looking version of One Punch Man, not the webcomic by One, who's the original creator. The reason why they put him like that in some scenes is basically the throwback to the original webcomic by One, mm-hmm. because that's how he looks in the original webcomic. So they thought, okay, we'll add this in because it'll be funnier if we did it like this. So yeah, it's one of the shows.
I mean, Full Metal Alchemist used that quite a lot.
Yeah. It was in Magi as well.
Yeah.
In some of the scenes in Magi when they just...
Well, you get a chibi version of the characters doing a reactor.
Well, Alibaba, you know, when he's in the trying to get a woman, and this huge kind of Kenshiro type woman turns up, is like, you know, he just fades to white. So yeah. Moving on, Ghost in the Shell. They've the new movie, they've put out a trailer for it.
Oh, if you can call it a trailer.
Yeah, I mean, it's more of a kind of homage to everything that happened before.
Bit of homage and hype, really, isn't it? It's like, yeah.
Tell you what, it did get me excited. I was looking down like, oh, yeah, remember that?
Oh. Well, yeah, it acknowledges a lot of what's went before. That's mainly what the trailer's doing.
It's basically the timeline of the Ghost in the Shell animes. It's like showing, like, what each one was, what it looked like, what it sort of entailed, building its way up to the reel of some clips of the new movie coming out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things that were pretty much guaranteed. One of them being Makoto jumping off a building and turning invisible on the way down.
Yeah, it's sort of a staple of the series now, and on it they basically made a compilation of all the time she did that back to back. So if they don't have that in the new one...
I loved how many of them were from the same angle, the same shot.
Oh, yeah. Like, one of them is actually a direct remake of that scene, so... Yeah.
That was Ghost in the Shell 2.0, wasn't it?
Is that the 2008 one, I think?
Yeah, the remake of the original mid-90s movie.
They remade it in 3D for the intro sequence to... I think it was in Second Gig.
Yeah.
Like, they remade it for the opening sequence.
Yeah. I'm curious about this movie because I kind of like Ghost in the Shell Arise.
Yeah.
You know, I did think that, because it's a prequel, obviously, Makoto looks younger.
Yeah, well, it doesn't really matter when she's a robot.
No, I know that, but they basically made her look younger in Arise just to kind of highlight the fact that it was a prequel. And
they also gave her a sensible haircut.
She had a sensible haircut in the series.
It stood up like a foot higher than her head.
She had a sensible haircut for the 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, Arise was beautifully animated, and it looks like they're going to carry that on.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why they'd take a step back and go, oh, we'll make this look worse. But so, but
I hope they don't.
Yeah, it looks pretty.
Yeah, like, it does. We don't really have many details about what the story's going to be about, but you know, it's Ghost in the Shell, so we can be hopeful of something decent, yeah. So at the very least.
They were showing a lot of, like, the usual suspects. Yeah. Like, the mage is going to be there, Bounto's going to be there.
I'm going to put some money on there being robots and AIs involved.
And some kind of conspiracy. Don't forget that. There will be a conspiracy.
Conspiracy in Ghost in the Shell?
Yes.
Oh, you're crazy.
Yes, I know.
So I would like it if it just comes out and is a very straightforward thing. It's like, yeah, the bad guy was the bad guy. There was nothing going on behind the scenes.
See, that would actually be surprising for Ghost in the Shell.
Actually,
would that be the best twist? That, like, everyone's looking for the twist,
yeah,
and there are none.
Yeah. They're trying to delve into the giant conspiracy, and at the end it's like, oh no, there was nothing going on. I'm just a jerk.
Can you imagine the fan reaction to that? If they were bold enough to actually pull a move like that with the new movie, the fan reaction would be amazing.
I think people would probably enjoy it, actually.
most people with a brain, but we're talking about the anime fan community, which covers all spectrums.
True.
Yes. Anyway, moving on. Final bit of news before we take a break. There's a manga I've been reading, which is called Gate. And I've been waiting for them to announce the anime adaptation of this, because it's one of the most it's one of the more interesting fantasy manga that I've read in a long time. It's based off a light novel, and it's called Gate. The Self Defense Forces Fight Like This in Another World, or Thus the JSDF Fought There, which is what the manga's called. Basically, in the center of Tokyo, in the middle of the day, just this giant gate appears, and from out of the gate pours this medieval army and all sorts of fantasy creatures, you know, drakes and wyverns and, you know, troll orcs and stuff like that. And they start killing people. And somebody carries through a flag, puts a flag down, says, I claim this land in the name of whatever empire. And then the JSDF show up and the Tokyo police force. And then they start shooting them and taking them prisoner. And then they're left with this gate to another world in the middle of Tokyo. So they send the JSDF through the gate to basically create a beachhead on the other side. The problem is, this world is basically more an agrarian society. It's basically a pre-industrial revolution society.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a wealth of untouched natural resources, which creates a lot of political tension in our world, because the USA, China basically want to create a new China there. Russia wants it. America wants it. All the superpowers want it. And the only access to it is in Japan.
Right.
So there's all that political tension for a start. And on the other side of the gate, the Empire decides that they want to retake the gate from the small JSDF force that's basically protecting the other side. So it's basically finding a way to build a relationship between the people on the other side of the gate, as well as protecting the gate on this side from America and China and Russia, who basically want to just go through and exploit the crap out of it.
Interesting premise.
Yeah. They also have to fight a dragon, which is basically an armored flying battleship.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, guns don't work against it.
Sure, an RPG would put a dent in it.
I'm not going to go there. An RPG, they use an RPG, but, you know. So, yeah. I'm actually looking forward to this. I hope they do it justice, because the manga's pretty good.
So it sounds like something they could easily mess up, though.
It is something they could easily mess up.
So that's sort of the case for a lot of manga. There's a lot of interesting manga out there that just doesn't translate that well.
Thing is, this is not a shonen manga at all. It's seinen, definitely seinen manga.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm actually looking forward to this. I hope they do it justice.
Hello. Do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films, and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out the Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well-staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week, and do it reasonably well.
Welcome back to Keyframe. We're now on our review section, and Rob has something nice to talk about.
Yes, Tsuritama. It's an interesting show about fishing.
Okay.
that caused Dave's head to go, hmm?
No, I'm just thinking, is there a subject there isn't an anime about?
I'm thinking, is there a way to make fishing interesting?
There is, and Tsuritama actually managed it, because it's a science fiction about fishing.
So they're like alien fish? Or
trying to fish in space.
There are aliens involved. Anyway, Yuki Sanada, he's basically a high school kid, but he has to move around a lot because of his grandmother's job. And it's had an effect on him. He tends to get anxious quite a lot, and he has difficulty making friends, which is kind of to be expected when, you know, you can only stay in a school for like a few months at a time before you move to a different school.
Yeah.
You know, so he is introverted, and he becomes anxious. When he does, he tends to freeze up. He has difficulty breathing, and it's like all this rage inside him is about to come out. So he looks kind of ferociously angry, and people tend to avoid him. And it happens to him quite a lot, which is unfortunate. Anyway, his grandmother's latest job takes them to Enoshima. And not long after they move in, a young boy called Haru, who's carrying a water pistol and wearing a fishbowl on his head, turns up, declares that he's an alien, and tells them that he's going to live there with them. And Yuki's grandmother agrees, but on one condition, which you don't find out. Natsuki Usami, who's nicknamed the Fishing Prince. yes, I know. An Indian guy called Akira, Akira Agarkar Yamada, who is escorted by a duck called Tapioca and works for the secret organization called Duck, which is Defensive Universal Confidential Keepers.
Okay, some sort of Men in Black kind of organization.
Yes, involving ducks.
Right.
And you have this very, very odd situation, and together they save the world, as you do.
Okay.
Okay.
They save the world from what?
I'm not going to go there. That would be a spoiler.
Okay.
That would be a spoiler. Anyway, it's actually a very, very enjoyable show. It's one of those shows that makes you smile, you know, it's got some laugh out loud funny moments, but it's one of those shows that definitely is designed to make you smile more than it's made to make you laugh. Mm-hmm. The characters are enjoyable, you know, even though you look at Yuki and you go, you know. But he grows in you as a character, especially because of the antics of Haru and the fishing prince and, you know, everyone else that just kind of gets involved with his life. It's a very, very colourful anime as well. It's interesting, right at the beginning, it starts off with this very kind of stylized retelling of one of the myths about Enoshima, which is the five-headed dragon. And then, you know, this princess comes down from the sky, with a faint smile, the dragon falls in love with her, blah, 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 blah. That does tie into the actual story itself. But animation-wise, it's really well done, surprisingly well done, you know, because with this not really involving much in the way of action per se, you know, especially combat-type action, sometimes when that happens, they cut corners a lot and it becomes noticeable. They try and hide it, but it becomes noticeable. Mm-hmm. In this, they haven't really done that. And it's nice to see that they've actually just said, okay, we're just going to make this a quality product from start to finish. The audio is really good. The English voice cast is actually pretty decent in this. Japanese dub is the one I prefer because I'm more of a purist, a hipster, I suppose. But
sometimes you get like a better quality of like emotive acting
Space Dandy's dub was brilliant. Yeah, Space Dandy's dub was brilliant.
I actually heard the dub.
Yeah, Space Dandy's dub was really good. It's really good. Cowboy Bebop's dub is really good. I prefer the English dubs for those to the Japanese one.
Bakano is still my favorite English dub. Everyone's got their
It seems authentic to the time period. That's why I think that one works nice as a dub.
So the English dub for this is actually pretty good. The Japanese dub does kind of work better, but I think there's some balance between the two. You know, I think the Japanese dub is only slightly better than the English in this on this occasion, which is great. You know, Because it means you can listen to it in either language.
Both at the same time for a challenge.
That would be a challenge. The plot is, it's actually paced really well. It's well thought out. It's, you know, obviously the comedy elements, there's comedy being very, very subjective. It is in the eye of the beholder. They do work. You know, as I said, it's designed to make you smile more than it's designed to make you laugh. Mm-hmm. You know, there are slapstick moments, stuff like that, but within the context of the story, they work. You know, the story itself, you know, it tries to downplay a lot of the drama and just basically say, okay, so there's drama, but it's not melodrama.
Mm-hmm. From what you've been saying, does it seem like it's aimed at a younger age group? Or?
I think this is one of those shows where I think anyone could watch it, you know, as long as anyone kind of teenagers and above can watch it, sit mm-hmm. down and happily watch it and just enjoy it for, you know, just being charming, quirky, odd. It is very odd at times. You know, it's not going down the whole parody route, even mm-hmm. though there is elements of parody in there. It's not going down the whole parody route.
But not the whole references.
Yeah, it's not going down the whole references route. I mean, Binbo Gamigat that I did, or Good Luck Girl, a couple of weeks ago, that one relied heavily on parody. Mm-hmm. For some of its comedy. This one is just trying to do comedy just kind of within the context of the story itself.
So self-referential.
Yeah,
than...
more self-referential. Did you ever see Barakamon? I'll talk to you about that later. But anyway, it's more self-referential. It's overall, it's a series that I'd happily recommend to people, you know, who just want to sit down and enjoy something pleasant that doesn't require you to, you know, that you can get invested in the story and the characters really easily, and it's enjoyable to watch. You can sit down, you know, you can watch it, and you don't have to stress yourself out over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because some shows you do kind of find yourself going, why am I watching this? You know, at least with this one, you don't need to go, it doesn't apply.
Yeah, or sometimes when drama swings too far.
Yeah, he's kind of, why are you doing that?
You know, it can be enjoyable, but stressful to watch.
Yeah. This one, as I said, it focuses more on drama than melodrama. You know, and it tries to downplay it. And ultimately, there's a lot of catharsis in this as well. You know, things progress nicely. It reminds me of Level E, in a way, actually, because of the involvement of aliens. Mm-hmm. Although Level E was more of an outright comedy, and Baka Prince is still one of my favorite characters ever created.
Okay.
Yeah, he Baka Prince from Level E is just basically, he is the most evil character of all time, except he looks handsome and cute and, you know, he just wants to have fun. That's what makes him evil. And he uses people as playthings to have his fun.
Cool.
Yes.
I could live like that. It sounds fun.
Actually, you remind me of him sometimes, Dave.
Do you want to flick my hair?
Yes. He is blonde as well.
That might be it.
Yes. Anyway, that was Tsuritama. It's a recommendation from me. I think it's a good solid anime.
Cool.
One that you can easily enjoy.
Fish.
Yes. And it's got fishing. Yes.
Hi everyone, this is Andrew from the Geek Show Podcast Network here to tell you to go listen to 4Panel. You've got all the latest news and reviews on all things comic and manga, and of course, lots of jokes about the Ten-Eyed Man. Go listen to it.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Keyframe. Now we're going to talk about live-action adaptations of animated stuff, cartoons as well, because there's some cartoons that have been... I mean, Scooby-Doo, for example.
Ah, yes.
You know, yeah, Scooby-Doo got turned into...
technically, part of it was still animated.
Technically.
I just
wanted Freddie Prinze Jr. to be animated as well.
Oh.
Poor Freddie Prinze Jr.
I think some of the casting for Shaggy, though, was perfect.
Oh, yeah, bang on.
It's just kind of... Sarah Michelle Gellar, after Buffy, you went down. So, yes, live action cartoons, animation to live-action movies. Do they work? You know, can they work?
Well, despite the fact that everyone seems to hate them, the Transformers movies are some of the top-grossing movies about.
What Transformers movies?
You can't deny,
I'm denying the entire existence of Michael Bay.
There was Transformers movie exist. Out in 1986. That was pretty good.
Yeah, that one was really good.
I said the Michael Bay movies do make a lot of money. But so
who is this Michael Bay you speak
despite
of?
The fact that they are, they get critically panned across the board, they make a huge amount.
They're dumb, stupid action, and that sells.
They get panned so much that Michael Bay actually has to go on stage and publicly apologize for them.
And he'll still make the next one.
I know.
And, well, essentially, his Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another one that's reimagining of a cartoon you may have loved as a child.
And what happened to their noses? I was like,
it's the lips that are the weird things. The lips on turtles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gave robots lips as well. Optimus Prime has lips.
Yeah, I noticed. I was like, very odd.
Yeah.
I guess he doesn't know how to express anything without lips.
See, aside from robots with lips, we've... we mentioned the Beauty and the Beast live-action adaptation.
And the Attack on Titan one. The Japanese movie industry is adapting a lot of live-action stuff.
And we mentioned the Naruto stage play.
Yeah, the Naruto stage play. I mean, there's the Lupin III musical, which is set in 18th century France. How that works, I'm not sure. Mm. It's Lupin III, and he wasn't in 18th century France.
So, stage plays are happening for basically anything in Japan.
Oh, gotcha.
Oh, like, not just in Japan.
Yeah, they're happening here as well.
The Shrek musical.
Oh, yes, of course.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I do find it amusing that in Sunderland, we've got they're going to have, at the same time, the Shrek musical and Wicked.
Yeah.
So I assume there is going to be a shortage of green face plants.
Yes, there is. It would round off if they actually had like a Hulk musical somewhere as well.
We need to get as many green characters in
Hulk
one
smash, place. Hulk smash.
We need some more green paint for Piccolo in the Dragon Ball Evolution stage play.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, it's now on the green screen.
He's invisible. Anyway, enough of that.
I got a blast from the past the other day where I saw images from the Pokemon musical. And I was like, oh my God,
yes,
I remember this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, where they have to fight a Mecha Mewtwo at the end and things.
Yeah. And there's a whole weird plot where Giovanni steals Ash's mum.
A what? Like, hey, a what?
Giovanni steals Ash's mum and they sort of have a weird romantic relationship thing going on.
Ash, meet your new daddy. Like, what?
So, like, in a way, some live action things are for fans of the show.
Yeah.
Some live action adaptations seem to be to give people who may not have encountered animation a chance to see the story.
Yeah.
There's the third option. Some live action stuff is because it's popular, so they think they can milk it for more money by doing a live action version, which is my main concern with the Attack on Titan thing, because we've seen it with the Gantz live-action movie, which was clearly just a cash cow.
Mm.
You know, they did the Yamato live-action movie, Space Battleship Yamato, which actually wasn't as bad as it was decent rather than good, but it was a bit too melodramatic, and they basically ripped off all kinds of effects and scenes from Battlestar Galactica and stuff like that. But it still worked.
There were ones like the Death Notes were pretty damn good. The first one was a bit slow, second one really good, but then they felt a need to make more. They'd done the whole story.
L changed the world?
Yeah, and then that's the last word. There's one from the point of view of the Death God. There's a load more movies. Like, you could have just done those first two and it would have been good, but at this point it just feels...
I like the way they did Ryuk in the Death Note movies.
Yeah.
It was something that, you know, got picked up on quite a lot. Everyone was referencing it, saying, "Oh, it's amazing how they've done it." But yeah, then they did The Last Name and L changed the world, and I was just kind of, now you're just milking.
Yeah, it's because they covered the entire story in the first two movies. They cut out a lot, but it sort of made sense because, tell you the manga and the anime milked it a bit with the whole stuff with Mello and Matt and Nier, was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was all a bit out of nowhere. So they cut that for the movie. They made it a lot more streamlined and it was a lot better of a watch than the anime, really.
Yeah.
And then they felt the need to make more and it just wasn't necessary.
I mean, this whole idea of turning animation into a live-action movie has been around for a lot longer than people think. And during the late 80s, early 90s, you had Mutronics, which starred Mark Hamill. And then the follow-up movie to that was Guyver Dark Hero, which was an awful, awful movie involving bio-boosted armor guy who's basically wearing a rubber suit of bio-boosted armor and lots of insectoid characters who look like rejects from Power Rangers wearing rubber suits, and they're all bashing each other with their rubber suits.
I think we're seeing a lot more of it now, partly because I think VFX has caught up enough that we can actually like produce things close enough to the real, like, well, to the cartoon versions.
Yeah.
I also think it's the fact that animation is becoming a bit more mainstream. Like, Disney movies now aren't just kids' movies, they're family movies.
Well, more than that, they've Disney have been aiming a lot of shows and merchandise at older fans.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the Princess line is actually aimed at, like, older, like, grown-up girls rather than... And so,
well, it's kind of that nostalgia of when they were younger, you know, and there was the whole, it was all about the Disney princesses and look how beautiful they are.
And once upon a time, whenever they introduce a new character that's from everyone's childhood, that gets a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And that's an ongoing drama that's doing quite well.
It's not just the stuff that requires VFX, though. I mean, if you take kind of a midpoint between it being something like 20th Century Boys, which they have done a live action version of. They've not done an animation for it, but they were, you know, it's one of those ones that was slated for an animated release, and it eventually never happened because of creative differences between the author and the studio. But they have done a live action version of 20th Century Boys, and the VFX work in that is very low key. But then you go on to the more kind of romantic comedy stuff, things like Lovely Complex. They did actually do live-action version of Lovely Complex, and it wasn't that bad.
No, a little bit like the Attack on Titan one, that they didn't do the characters' hair colours as depicted in the anime. But
love stories can translate really easily to live-action from animation.
I mean, it's not just that. They've done a live-action version of Usagi Drop. They've done a live-action version of Grave of the Fireflies. In fact, they've done two. There's a live-action version of The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. In fact, I think there's two or three of those.
I really want to see them because I'm a huge fan of The Girl Who Leapt Through Time.
Yeah. And I think there is a live-action version of Barefoot Gen as well. So, you know, there are certain properties that can translate really easily to live-action. It's this whole thing, you know, can it work? It's one of the ways that I judge certain types of show, like romantic comedies and stuff like that. Can it work as a live-action instead of just as an anime? Mm-hmm. You know, if it can work as a live action as well as just as an animation, then it's potentially worth watching.
So the thing is, some things won't, and they're still worth watching.
No, some things won't. I mean, it's like, not a hard and fast rule. It's more of a guideline. Like,
for example, Space Dandy would probably never work as a live action.
Yeah. Doesn't mean it's not worth watching. I'm just saying it's more of a guideline kind of thing for romantic comedies type thing.
Like, down to earth, like a place that's based in real world was Bento that I watched the other week.
Yeah.
I don't think that would translate into a live action very well.
It'd be fun to see them try.
Not sure you can launch someone with a basket that far.
I want to... Mythbusters. Dear Mythbusters.
Can someone effectively fight with chopsticks?
Yes. Can you make a basket cannon?
Oh, yeah. Beerus from Dragon Ball can. It's very good with chopsticks.
So,
if you take something like Bakuman, which is just a series about manga...
Yeah,
you know, it's
that would easily work.
That
as a
easily
live
works. You know, they have done a live action version of it as well, but it easily works as a live action. You know,
because it's just relationships between the characters.
Yeah,
those
are the sorts of shows I'm talking about when I say, you know, can it work as a live action or as an anime? Generally, if it can work as both, it's potentially worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got something like that only works as an anime, you know, generally I've found that, you know, most of them don't tend to be that good. There are exceptions to the rule, obviously. But I do want this. Want them to do more effects work. I want them to choose stuff that, you know, people wouldn't normally choose, and basically make it happen in real life.
Wasn't there recently Assassination Classroom was announced to have a live action?
Yes, it does. It has a live action. And
that has to be very effects driven, as the lead of it is a giant tentacle monster thing.
Yeah, Koro-sensei. He's basically a smiley faced tentacle monster. Yeah. I really like the manga. I only picked it up a couple of months ago, and I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was just kind of one of these kind of I'm not going to enjoy it, and then I started reading it and thought, actually, this is quite good. This is quite a good premise. I've seen the trailer for the live action version of Assassination Classroom, and the way they've animated Koro-sensei actually works.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's supposed to be able to travel at speeds of Mach 25. So it's like, yes, faster than speeding bullet, then some.
I've seen like the clips of him like bouncing around a classroom and stuff, and like he looks very nice. And I feel that a lot of visually heavy animes that get translated, the important things get lost in the translation. Like famously Dragon Ball Evolution.
Oh god. Mm-hmm. He went there, Dave.
What's he doing?
Stop. They took ideas but didn't get the important stuff across.
Yeah.
Yeah. In with anime that have a lot of things going on, it's easy to lose the important details, but it's so essential you get them in. Like Goku's childhood is a huge part of Dragon Ball, his heritage and all this sort of stuff. And that was sort of just got rid of Evolution.
Yeah.
Dragon Ball Evolution is the Super Mario Brothers equivalent.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And there's that fan movie that's been made, and that seems to do it so much better. And because it's fan made, they knew what was important.
Yeah. You mean the short film where it had Android 18 and 19?
Yeah.
That was really well done.
Yeah,
as well. I thought the way that even it's a fan project, but it's really good. Just a couple that I want to bring up because this is kind of harking back to some of the older titles, and not many people, you know, you'll have seen Crying Freeman with Mark Dacascos in, which is based on the anime version of Crying Freeman, which is based on the really violent manga version about the sculptor who's kidnapped and then trained as an assassin for the 108 Dragons. Yada, yada, yada. The thing that catches everyone off guard is finding out there is actually a live-action Fist of the North Star.
Okay.
A Western version.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Not an Eastern. Both of these, Crying Freeman and Fist of the North Star, are live-action versions that came from the West, not from the East.
The stories that... it's not an adaptation, but the story goes that in order to get funding to make the Matrix film, the Wachowski brothers showed the producers and the backers Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
And said, basically, we want to make...
this.
And Ghost in the Shell is now probably going to have a Western adaptation movie.
2017 is when it's slated for. Costas Mandylor plays the role of Kenshiro, by the way. He looks nothing like him, especially not the chin. But there's others, though. An interesting one that came from Japan was the live-action adaptation of Mushishi.
Mm.
It was more centered around a particular couple of episodes of the original series of Mushishi rather than trying to do the entirety of Mushishi in one go. But that actually worked, because with Mushishi being episodic, they could expand that into a feature-length movie, and it worked. The guy who they chose to play as Ginko, I've forgotten his name, but I thought he worked quite well. So it can work depending, and Mushishi is another effects heavy one.
Yeah.
Using the effects in a different way. It's not all metal and stuff like that. It's more natural kind of, floating lights and all sorts of weird creatures and stuff like that. But yeah, it worked. I liked it,
Cool. So as we're kind of winding down a bit, bit of a personal pick, if you could have any anime or cartoon adapted into a live action version, what would you like?
Samurai Jack.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah,
but actually it's very stylized.
Yeah,
so I don't know if they'd be able to get that style across in live action.
The wonders of cosmetic surgery.
Are you saying his head should be that square?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I'd quite like to see, like, Eureka 7.
Eureka 7, yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting one. Although we don't talk about the supposed sequel, which is basically just some guy's version of fan fiction, which is awfully written.
My personal pick would be, right, you know they did a live-action Power Rangers reboot thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, if you had a live-action version of Techoman Blade, or Technoman as it was called.
Ooh,
in the,
yes, that'd be interesting.
In the West.
Actually, I think there is a live-action version of Techoman, isn't there?
I've not seen it. There might be a version of the first Techoman.
Yeah, I think it's of the
But
the
if
first
you
Techoman.
Could have, like, you know, the sort of tech we've seen with Iron Man-style suits?
Yeah.
And the sort of monster work we've seen with, like, Kaiju in Pacific Rim for the spider crab things.
Yeah.
I think that would be really cool. Like, a post-apocalyptic Earth already, like, decimated by alien invasion, and guys in mech suits fighting it out would be pretty sweet.
I've just found one that I have to mention before, you know, because there's others that I do want to mention, but this one I have to mention. I didn't know there was a live action version of this. Have you heard of a little comedy anime series called Therma Rome? Sorry, it's all about baths, you know, and it's basically the idea is basically. Some guy in ancient Rome, because the Romans loved taking baths, there's a time portal type thing, and he steps through, and somehow he ends up in modern day Japan, or kind of, you know, going around hot springs, things like that. And it's about the cultural similarities in terms of baths between the two. And there's all sorts of oddities that happen. And they made a live action version of it. I'm not sure how it works. It don't make sense.
Probably has some baths.
Yes, it does have that. I didn't know. You remember Tetsujin 28, Dave?
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of the original kind of giant robo things. They've got a live action movie of that.
Okay.
I didn't even know about this. But yeah, if I'm going to choose one to do, absolutely, I'd have to go. I'm torn. It's either Giant Robo, The Day the Earth Stood Still, or Gunbuster.
They did The Day the Earth Still one, didn't
that's
they?
A live action, no.
No, that's a different...
Oh, was that a different one?
Yeah, The Day the Earth Stood Still is just a subtitle.
Oh, okay.
It's not the sci-fi film that you're thinking of.
Yeah, Giant Robo, The Day the Earth Stood Still, or Gunbuster.
So, what I can tell is we all want giant robots as live action things.
Well, yeah, and Rob wants giant robot space opera.
Yeah.
Because there's not enough budget spent already.
Yes, I want more budget spent on space opera. I like space opera. Legend of Galactic Heroes, for the win.
That's the space operaist of the space operas.
Yes, I know. Terra E, for the win.
Anyway, we've been Keemframe. Tell us on the Facebook what you'd like to see as a live-action adaptation. Tell us what you really didn't want to see that happened.
Dragon Ball Evolution.
Yes, we know,
we
Dave.
We don't talk about that.
Anyway, I have been Ben.
I was Dave.
And I have no idea why my voice ended up like that. I was Rob.
And we'll see you next week.